Jim Mars was born December 5, 1943, in Fort Worth, Texas. He died from a heart attack August 2, 2017, at his home in Wise County. He is survived by his wife of 50 years, Carol, his two daughters, Catherine Lafitte of Fort Worth, Jamie Castle and her husband, Chris Castle, his brother David and wife, Sandy of Bridgeport, and grandchildren, Moxie, Jackson, and Scout. Jim Mars earned a degree in journalism from the University of North Texas and attended graduate school at Texas Tech in Lubbock. He has worked for several Texas newspapers, including the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Beginning in 1976 until his retirement in 2007, Mars taught a course on the assassination of President John F. Kennedy at the University of Texas at Arlington. In 1989, his book Crossfire, The Plot That Killed Kennedy, was published to critical acclaim and reached the New York Times paperback nonfiction bestseller list. It became a basis for the Oliver Stone film JFK. Other books by Mars include Alien Agenda, which was the top-selling nonfiction UFO book in the world, Rule by Secrecy, The Terror Conspiracy Revisited, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, The Trillion Dollar Conspiracy, Our Occulted History, Population Control, and his last book, The Illuminati. Mars has appeared on ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, C-SPAN, and the Discovery, Learning, and History channels. Good Morning America, Geraldo, Montel Williams, Today, Tech TV, and Larry King Live. He's appeared with George Norrie, Art Bell, Alex Jones, and Jeff Rentz. He's appeared on many other local and regional programs. Memorials to help with medical expenses for Jim can be sent to P.O. Box 189, Springtown, Texas, 76082. I'm S.D. Patrick. This is the Midnight Rider News Show, and tonight we have our tribute to Jim Mars.
I welcome this kind of examination.
We came.
And for the international order that we have worked for generations to build.
A new world order.
New world order.
We saw.
If suddenly there was a threat to this world from some other species, from another planet, outside in the universe.
I always talk to you like the other day.
And then we're going to Washington, D.C. to take back the White House!
He died.
Ah!
He died.
But that's a wicked woman.
Because people have got to know whether or not their president's a crook. Well, I'm not a crook.
You can keep it.
Period. Period. Period.
They are the focus of evil in the modern world.
It's a catastrophe.
Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome.
This is the Midnight Rider News Podcast.
Check, check. Okay. Actually, I'm Scotch-Irish, but there we go. This will be fun.
Hi, this is Jim DiEugenio. I'm the editor and publisher of the website KennedysandKing.com and the author of Destiny Betrayed and Reclaiming Parkland. I met Jim Mars back in 1991 at something called the Dallas ASK conference, all right, assassination of John F. Kennedy. I think that was the first one of those upon the release of the movie JFK, which, of course, Jim was one of the source materials for the screenplay of that, as was Jim Garrison's On the Trail of the Assassins, all right? Oliver wanted to purchase Crossfire, Jim's book, because that gave you a very wide background into the whole JFK case. Jim Mars' book, Crossfire, is an unusual book because it doesn't follow the way most people wrote books about the Kennedy assassination up until that time. Most books are written in somewhat chronological order, all right, and they follow a theme line in order to prove some kind of a thesis, all right. That's the way most books were written at that time. But Jim's book kind of altered the rules in that his book really wasn't a chapter by chapter chronology or a chapter by chapter thematic development. It was really a kind of an encyclopedia, a kind of mini encyclopedia on the JFK case. All right. It was organized by topic matter. Right, like he'd have one chapter on the Secret Service. He would have one chapter on the events in Dealey Plaza. You know, he'd have one chapter on organized crime. He'd have another chapter on Oswald. And so what he did in that book is he plumbed the best work that had been done in the field in those topics, and then he went ahead and added to it some of the original research, like interviews, etc., documents he had gotten, and then he gave you a kind of summary of where we were at that point in time, okay, in the JFK case. So it was a valuable book, I thought, in that respect. And although Jim had a little problem with his publisher because they didn't do a full index and they didn't do a footnote section. And by the way, as time goes on, more and more publishers are trying to cut those things out to save money. All right. He did later get a full index of the book, all right, which he sent to me. And on top of that, if you were to call him and ask him about the source material that you read in his book, the guy had all the material right there. Jim kept very good files, all right, on his research. So if you would ask him about a certain point, all right, you know, he would get, okay, I'll get back to you tomorrow. You know, he'd go ahead and look it up that night, and the next day he'd get back to it. This is the source material for that information. And I did that with him twice, all right. So he was a very well-organized kind of old-school journalist, which is how he started his career, by the way. He had been he got a journalism degree, then went to work at the Fort Worth Star Telegram for a number of years, I think 11 or 12 years. All right, and then he got in, like being in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, of course, he met some of these guys who were doing their JFK research, and he got interested in it, and that's where he got the idea to do his book Crossfire. And I think Crossfire was published like in 88 or 89, which is a couple years before JFK came out. And Jim was trying to get a big publisher for that book. I think one of the people he went to was Simon & Schuster. And Simon & Schuster gave the book to Sylvia Marr, who reviewed for them, because she died about a year or two later. And she thought it was very good. Okay, she said, I wouldn't have any problem publishing it. But Simon & Schuster wouldn't publish it anyway. All right? So Jim couldn't get a major publisher for the book, like most JFK authors can't get major publishers for books. Very, very few and far between. And it's not their fault. It's just the publishing houses don't want to do those kind of books, all right, for a lot of different reasons. So Oliver Stone bought the rights to the book, and the book was a big bestseller because of that. Not quite as many copies as On the Trail of the Assassins, but it still sold a lot of copies. All right, and so he later on, many years later, I think like in 2014, he went ahead and revised and expanded the book. There was a new version out, which unfortunately I didn't get a chance to read. And I also believe, if I remember correctly, that they did a documentary film, which I think you can get on Amazon.com. Okay. Jim was, during the heyday of the Kennedy assassination, which was that very brief 10-month period from about the fall, early autumn of 1991 till about April or May of 1992, when JFK, the movie, made the Kennedy assassination a topic for discussion in the mainstream media. Jim did a couple of pretty big shows, and I thought he acquitted himself pretty well. I think Richard Belzer stood in for a late night host one night, and he brought Jim Mars on. And when Geraldo Rivera was actually open to this stuff, he had Jim Mars on one of his programs also. And I thought Jim came across fairly well. He was also in John Barber's documentary, The Garrison Tapes, and I thought he came off well there too. All right. Later on, Jim expanded his horizons and wrote, I think, about 11 or 12 books on varying subjects. All right, but he never lost his interest in the JFK case, and he almost always, would show up at these Dallas conferences. And one of his favorite topics, because I went to a few, one of his favorite topics was the subject of Jack Ruby, which very, very few people knew that topic better than Jim Mars. You know, obviously did a lot of homework on that topic and interviewed some people who knew him. And his book is very valuable for the information and the biographical information on Jack Ruby. And like I said, he never stopped researching that. So he was kind of a font of information on that particular topic, right? Jim, like I said, because Crossfire was such a success, he decided to branch out to these different topics, and he managed to be able to, like, quit his day job as a reporter, and he became more or less a full-time author. You know, and more than one of his books became a bestseller. So kudos to him for being able to do that, to make a living doing what he really wanted to do, was to write, you know, 11 or 12 different books. I didn't read all of them. I read a couple of them, you know, but you know, I congratulate him on that. You know, there's not too many people who can do that, you know, especially in the subjects that Jim went ahead and decided to enter into. So he deserves to be congratulated for that. And finally, Jim was a really good guy. All right. Whenever I called him, he would always answer my questions, always had enough time for me. And at these conferences, he was always accessible, be willing to talk to anybody, you know, and he would always show up when he was invited on time, you know. Even though he became a pretty popular author, he never kind of forgot the place where he came from, which, of course, was the JFK assassination. You know, so Jim Mars, I think he's 73 or 74. And I thought that, you know, a few months ago it had been reported he had passed away, which he hadn't, you know, but I guess the other afflictions he had became kind of too tough for him, and his heart gave out. So that's my opportunity to give my little salute to my buddy Jim Mars.
Every now and again, someone comes along who really has an impact on a particular society or a particular community, and that person was Jim Mars. Jim Mars did more for the JFK research community than most people can do for their own career in a lifetime. He will be sorely missed. His wit, his wisdom, his big Texas smile, all of that will be never forgotten, but sadly never replaced either. He was one of my good friends. He was one of my mentors. I will miss him dearly. Chris Gallup, JFK, The Continuing Inquiry.
I'm Phil Nelson, the author of 3 published books focusing on Lyndon Johnson's involvement in the JFK assassination and his several other treasons, which can be found on my website, lbjmastermind.com. I've been privileged to know Jim Mars for about 5 years and saw him speak at several conferences, the first of which was in 2008. He did a huge favor for me in giving me a dust jacket blurb of endorsement for my second book, LBJ from Mastermind to the Colossus. I was also fortunate to be with him at parties during several conferences and to dinner with him, where he regaled us with stories from his legendary past. Jim will always be known for his good humor and dry wit, but even more for his encyclopedic knowledge of the people and events related to the JFK assassination. His loss will be felt by all those who've read his books, or seen and heard his presentations or internet videos for a very long time. His works will always be the legends that they've already become.
Wow, what an honor. And thank you, ST, for the invite to do this. My name is Rob Clark, host of the Lone Gunman Podcast. Some of you might be familiar with my voice out there, but we're not here to talk about me today. We're here to remember the late, great James Farrell Mars Jr., affectionately known as Jim. He was a very, very big inspiration to me and my passion for researching the JFK assassination. You know, not only was his book one of the bases for Oliver Stone's movie JFK, just listening to this guy do his interviews on radio, you know, back in the 90s, I loved to hear Jim talk. I mean, I could listen to Jim Mars talk about anything, the weather, the stock market. I mean, he just had a way about him. He was a great storyteller, which, you know, comes from his background as a reporter and a teacher. You know, by all accounts, you know, Jim was a great guy, and he would do just about anything for anybody. He would go on just about anybody's show that would ask him on there and do an interview with them and be very, very generous with his time. You know, he authored over a dozen books in his life. And, you know, I think old Jim never met a conspiracy he didn't like, but he always told you at the beginning of his books, don't trust anything that he writes. Do your own research. And these are very, very valuable words to live by, no matter what you're looking into. So thank you, ST, and the Midnight Writer Podcast for giving me the opportunity to remember the legacy that was Jim Mars. May he rest in peace.
Brian Lloyd of Midnight Writer News here. Well, God rest Jim Mars. He's been certainly a mainstay on the JFK scene for years. Perhaps the second or third book I read on the JFK issues was Crossfire, a great synopsis and overview of the JFK material. I also like Rule of Secrecy and Alien Agenda. I was blessed to meet him last year, and he signed all my books. A true pioneer, and he will certainly be missed.
Over the years, I've been asked by many people, will we ever know the truth about the Kennedy assassination? I'm here to tell you, yes. You know it now. It's just that most people do not want to deal with it. All right, what am I talking about? I'm talking about the coup d'etat of 1963. Now, if you think that's some kind of wild conspiracy theory, follow me as we go through the factual evidence, much of which has not been presented to the public, and let's follow the tracks of this conspiracy.
Good evening, my friends. This is Deborah Conway with JFK Lancer. And I just wanted to talk to you a few minutes about my friend, Jim Mars. I know he was your friend too, most probably, as he was special in many, many people's hearts and lives. Even if you just read his book, you felt like you knew him. But I was very fortunate because I did know him. Back in the late 90s, when I got started kind of coming out of the closet as a JFK assassination person, Jim was one of the first people that I called and met, and we just hit it off. He believed in me, I believed in him, and he did so many things to make JFK Lancer work. He helped me invent JFK Lancer. His book had been out for a while, the JFK movie was out, and he hadn't changed a bit from the day that probably he was in his 20s. People said, oh, Jim Mars, he's so awesome. He's just so friendly. I can't tell you how much that meant to me as a newcomer, a woman, no college degree, just an unbelievably voracious reader. And I knew the case. I'd talk to him on the phone, and he'd laugh, and he'd say, "Girl, you know this case." And I'd say, "Yep." His encouragement kept me going many times when we couldn't find a witness, or we couldn't find a document, or we were fighting with the review board, or we were fighting with each other. There was no one like him. There'll never be another Jim Morris. He's just too unique to be replaced. And I have to say, what he had brought, not just to me, but to the JFK Lancer community, to the Kennedy assassination community around the world, is a feeling of camaraderie, of partnership, of we're in this together. Let's all fight. Let's all have an understanding of what's really going on in the world with our government. Let's seize it. Let's take it. It's ours. Instead of having other people write the script for us. I know that I'll be thinking of him for years and years, seeing his face, seeing his smile, and waiting to hear one more story. And I appreciate this opportunity to honor him. So, good night. And thank you so much, and please remember Jim.
Hello, this is Doug Horn. I'm the author of the five-volume book, Inside the Assassination Records Review Board, and also the new book, Deception, Intrigue, and the Road to War, about FDR and Pearl Harbor. Most of you probably already know that I worked on the staff of the JFK Assassination Records Review Board from 1995 to 1998. And so from that time on, I've been fully immersed in the JFK assassination. I really wanted to speak tonight about Jim Morris and share with everybody the great warmth that I feel for him every time I hear his name or think of his face. When I see a picture of Jim Morris, I'm just flooded with positive vibes. He was possibly the warmest and most welcoming of all the JFK researchers that I have ever met. I first met him at a JFK conference in 1993, the ASK conference in Dallas on the 30th anniversary of the event. And so that's, I guess that's 24 years ago. And he couldn't have been more friendly. And several members of the audience, I was one of them, shared a couple of beers with him after a lecture, and I found the guy just a wonderful person and eminently approachable. And I'd like to say that's how I feel about his work. His book Crossfire, which of course was one of the two books that became the bedrock for Oliver Stone's movie JFK, his book Crossfire had a big impact on me when it came out, and I think it was 1988. It confirmed in my mind two things. Number one, that we had a coup in this country. I think he was the first person whose book I had read who wasn't afraid to come up with that conclusion and to say that. So that empowered me to be able to think and to talk that way. So there's so much evidence in his book, overwhelming evidence that we had a coup in this country, and also the fact that it was not a small conspiracy, it was a large conspiracy. There were many people that knew what was coming down, not only within the government, rogue elements within the government at high levels, but people outside the government. So I think his book had tremendous impact, not only on the readers who read it, but of course on Oliver Stone and the resulting film. So three cheers for Jim Morris, who remained from the first day I met him, eminently approachable and congenial and welcoming. So he did a lot for the research community in that regard, and he's to be commended for it. And I'd just like to maybe give one specific about Jim that most people probably don't know. I just sat down with his book Crossfire in my hand and reviewed his pages on the Zapruder film. And I note that back when his book was published in 1988, even then he had an open mind about the possibility of Zapruder film alteration. He had an open mind about it. He didn't come down with firm conclusions one way or the other, but he had an open mind. And later, when I met my good friend in California, Sidney Wilkinson, who today continues her Zapruder film research, it turned out that, unbeknownst to me, he was a very close friend of Sidney and her husband, and was very supportive of their efforts to do research into the Zapruder film's provenance and its authenticity or lack thereof, and remain a close allies of theirs in their research, and their research is still ongoing. So three hurrahs for Jim Mars. I know he went on to do research in many other areas, 9/11, his alien agenda book, and other subjects, and that all of those things required courage. He would follow the facts where they led him. He wasn't afraid of tarring and feathering his reputation by looking into subjects that were still, and still are today, taboo subjects for many others. So he's just a man of infinite courage, infinite good humor, and great humanity. So that's about all I wanted to say today, was to give Jim Mars a big thank you. Thank you, Jim.
Well, my name is William Mattson Law. I am the author of In the Eye of History. It deals with the medical evidence pertaining to the assassination of JFK. The first time I met Jim Mars, I believe it was in 1996. Could have been 97. It was my first appearance at a Lancer conference, first one I went to. He was very nice to me. And, of course, I knew who he was because of the book Crossfire. I'd read it a couple of times by then, and I was taken with him. I was standing there listening to him talk to someone, and after it was done, I walked up and I introduced myself and told him I was interested in the assassination. I asked if he would be kind enough to have a picture taken with me, which he was, and put his arm around me, and we smiled for the camera, and somebody took a couple of shots. And he talked a little while with me. And then every conference I would go to, he seemed to be at just about every one that I would go to every year. And in the intervening years, I had written my own book. I think it came out in 2004. 2004, I had written my own book, the first one I'd done, In the Eye of History. And I was having a book signing there at the conference. And I looked up from the table to see Jim standing in front of me. And he said, "William, would you mind signing my copy of your book?" And I did, and we had a little chat. And the next day, I think, was the dinner that they have at the end of the conference. And I was listening to the speakers. And I didn't know it, but Jim was sitting behind me at the next table. And during a break, he put his hand on my shoulder, and I turned around, and it was Jim, and he said, "William, I haven't had time to read all of your book yet, but I want you to know I've read enough of it to know that you've done a good journalistic job." And that meant a great deal to me. Jim always treated you with respect and kindness, and he always had a smile. I had drinks with him some years ago. And I remember someone saying at the table, "You know, you're one of the best known JFK researchers." And he said, "I don't consider myself to be a JFK researcher." He said, "I happen to be a journalist who's interested in the JFK assassination." The last time that I saw Jim was a couple of years ago. Might have been last year. No, I think it was 2 years ago. I had been married by that time, and he was giving a talk, and after the talk, I walked up and introduced myself, and he knew who I was, and I introduced my wife, Lori, and was kind enough to take a picture, and that's the way Jim was. He just was a kind of a happy-go-lucky guy, very serious about his work, very serious about investigating the JFK assassination. Always happy to talk to you, to answer your questions. He's going to be sorely missed by the research community and all of us that considered him to be a friend.
Hi, my name is Steve Ubaney. I am the architect of the Who Murdered book series, author of Who Murdered Elvis, author of Who Murdered FDR, and soon, here in a couple of months, author of Who Murdered JFK. I wanted to take a couple of minutes to tell everyone about the genius that was Jim Mars, and genius he was. It's refreshing that every now and then you run across somebody that is just different. And when I say different, I mean that as a compliment. Jim was uniquely talented. He was a diligent researcher, and he could get to the bottom of a situation and connect the dots faster than anyone I've ever seen. And when you read his finished work, he always left you wanting more. There are few of those people. I think personally that you could take the dictionary and empty all the good words out of the dictionary and attach them to Jim and his work, and there would be room left over for more complimentary words. I think of him in the highest possible regard. He was a high-class man, and I can't begin to tell everyone how much he's going to be missed by the JFK researchers community, as well as other communities that he, schools of thought that he investigated and published information on. I think that we were lucky, in a sense, that we had a guy like Jim Mars in our lifetime to come along and open our eyes to lots and lots of things. And he's certainly going to be missed, but he'll never be replaced. I hope everyone is well, and I hope to talk to you again soon. Take care.
Howdy, good day. This is Chris Milligan, publisher at Trine Day. You know, there's really not much to say about Jim Mars. He was a courageous, courageous man. Always had a good word to say. Had a smile and a hat. And he led the way for many. And if Jim hadn't decided to do what he did, just like James Tague and others, he stood up. God bless him. May he rest in peace. Salute you, Jim Mars. Amen. Blessings. Bye.
And then John J. McCloy ended up sitting on the Warren Commission to determine what happened to President Kennedy. While serving on that commission, he stated, "It was of paramount importance to show the world that America is not a banana republic where a government can be changed by conspiracy." And that was their objective, is to try to scotch any talk of conspiracy. And that's been going on to this very day. And there are still those in the status quo establishment who do not want to mention the coup of 1963. But unfortunately, my fellow Americans, America is just another banana republic, because in November of 1963, our nation and our future was altered by a murderous conspiracy accomplished at the highest levels of the federal government of the United States. And that's all you need to know about the Kennedy assassination.
Hello, I'm Gary Fannin, author of The Innocence of Oswald, 50 plus years of lies, deception, and deceit in the murders of President John F. Kennedy and Officer J.D. Tippit. I knew Jim Mars for nearly 30 years, and every time you were in Jim's company, Jim always made you feel like you were the reason for the conversation. He was in an extreme league of incredible journalists, authors in the JFK assassination community, the likes of Mark Lane, Jim Garrison, and Robert Grodin. His work will stand the test of time, and for the people who knew Jim, his stories and humor will last our lifetimes, and we were the lucky ones to know him. To give a story that hasn't been told before in public, I want to tell you about a conversation I had with Jim last November at the Texas Theater in Oak Cliff, the famous theater where Lee Harvey Oswald was falsely arrested for the murders of Officer J.D. Tippit, and eventually President Kennedy. Jim, Robert Grodin, and I were all there for a double screening of a film I worked on with John Barber, The American Media and the Second Assassination of President John F. Kennedy, and also Randy Benson's excellent documentary, The Searchers, which details the early researchers like Jim Mars and Robert Grodin, as well as others who started working on the assassination immediately after it happened. Jim, Robert, and I were talking about working on the Oliver Stone film JFK. I made the comment that although I knew I wasn't listed in the credits, it was still an honor to work on the film in a small capacity. Robert Grodin said to me, "Yeah, I didn't get any credits for writing the movie." I said, "Robert, you were one of the main technical advisors and played four different parts in the movie." Robert said, "Yeah, but I still didn't get credit for writing." Then Jim Mars said, "Yeah, I didn't get credit for JFK either." At this point, I started laughing. I said, "Jim, your book Crossfire and Jim Garrison's On the Trail of the Assassins were the two books the movie was based upon. How can you say you didn't get credit?" Jim said, "Oh, no, not for my book, for my acting." I asked Jim what part he acted in the movie JFK, and he said to me, "Gary, I shaved my beard and mustache and played Joseph Miltier on Houston Street. Oliver Stone never gave me any acting credit." I couldn't stop laughing, and at the same time, later that evening, I'm watching the opening minutes of the film, and I'm trying my best to pause the film to see, you know, where Jim is. Needless to say, it was hard to see him and all the actors in the crowd on Houston, but I'm sure that Jim was there. He just didn't shave his beard or mustache for anyone. In closing, I'd like to thank Jim for all his contributions and for always making myself and other researchers and authors welcome. He would give us any information he had and never ask for anything in return. My sympathies go to Carol and the Mars family during this difficult time. If I know Jim, he has already conducted several interviews with JFK, RFK, MLK, Lee Oswald, and he knows all the truth now. As Jim always said, always question authority. Now in heaven, he is one of the authorities. Jim always believed the truth was already out there, but he knew the media would never report it. I hope Jim is enjoying a cigar and a Jack Daniels and continues to channel the truth to the rest of us searching on this mortal coil. God bless you, Jim Mars, and may God continue to bless and comfort your family.
Hi, this is John Barber. My friend Sean Patrick is asking me to say a few words about Jim Mars. For those of you who know me, I find it difficult to say a few words about anything, especially someone I truly liked and deeply admired for the work he contributed to both of my films, The Garrison Tapes, Parts 1 and Part 2, and especially to our 50th anniversary presentation from UNLV called The Last Word on the Assassination, on which he was one of the three show-stopping panelists, along with Joan Mellon and Dick Russell. They could have taken that act on the road to Broadway. My heart grows sad and slows down when I think of Jim, Jim Mars, and Jim Garrison. But if Sean had asked me to write something about someone who had just died that I didn't like, the blood pumps and the fingers fly. And since Shakespeare said brevity is the soul of wit, I am immediately brief and to the point, usually only using one word, good. But if I get carried away, I add a second word, riddance. As an almost semi-orphan kid, I used to haunt movie theaters, falling in love with a variety of actors and actresses that evidenced a quality of sweetness and affection sorely lacking in my little life. Robert Donat in Goodbye, Mr. Chips, but especially Ed Gwynn as Santa Claus in Miracle on 34th Street. The image of that sweet man haunted me for decades. I never saw it in real life until I met Jim Mars. He was Santa without a red suit, giving us the gift of his presence, but more so, the gift of his endless fountain of facts about the murder of John F. Kennedy. He was right there with Sylvia Marr, Penn Jones, and dozens of others, risking lives and reputations by telling us the truth. As an investigative journalist and writer, Jim was a bear, digging out these hidden pearls of proof of a vast conspiracy by the government and media. As a man, he was just a teddy bear with a beard. 3 years ago, when we did The Last Word on the Assassination, and Robert Kennedy Jr. bailed out on us just a couple of days before the event, Jim and Joan and Dick bailed me out at a fraction of what RFK wanted from me in money. on a large screen in front of an audience. The power of the Garrison tapes is overwhelming. I honestly thought that no one could follow that film until Jim and Joan and Dick did their thing. It was theater and history at its best. One moment stood out indelibly for me. It belonged to Jim and an 18-year-old student. The student rose and said he believed the CIA did murder the president, but why would they risk this action at high noon? Jim spoke up quickly as though he'd been thinking about this for a long time and was just waiting for somebody to ask him. An 18-year-old boy did. Jim said, "It was a public execution on purpose. This purpose being to show anyone running for the presidency that they'd better have second thoughts about who runs the country. Young man, they confiscated dozens of films you'll never see, but the Zapruder film they left for all of us to see, especially those who were running for president. It's for them to see and to fear." Jim Garrison said almost the exact same thing to me in 1980. It is in part two, I'm happy to say, as is Jim, but no one said it as passionately as Jim Mars. My final words for now, at least, I put on Facebook the day I got the expected horrible news. I thank the hundreds and more who commented on it, but they were my very first thoughts, so I want them to be my very last words. Jim Mars, an invaluable collaborator and generous friend, died this morning. To paraphrase Mark Twain, Jim would rather be in hell where there's better company than in heaven where there's better weather. But I think his sweet soul will take him through the pearly gates where God will learn something. Jim's mind was a library of knowledge, especially about JFK's murder, which he happily shared. Aside from his unfillable loss, what saddens me is folks referring to it as a loss to the JFK research community. It is not a community. It never was a community. It never will be a community. Aside from the intelligent trolls which infest it, it is populated by more colossal egos and the cheapest, pettiest people I have ever met, more than I ever encountered in the showbiz community. Thank God for us in history that Jim Mars was not one of them. As Ed Murrow used to say when he signed off the news, good night and good luck.
Hi, ST. This is Beverly Oliver. I'm calling from Dallas, Texas, and I just wanted to share a few memories and a few moments about our dear friend. And he was just awesome. I really don't know what to say because there's not a life that met him that he didn't touch their lives in a very deep way. Jim Mars was a one-of-a-kind human being. That's exactly what he was, a human being. He was generous, he was kind, he was smart, he was everything you'd want your friend to be. That was Jim Mars. And there wasn't a person that he wouldn't help. There wasn't anybody could approach him, and he always had time to visit, to talk, to share, to answer questions. And he was, and his books always will be, the go-to information for the JFK assassination. I will always consider it an honor to have known him. When I sing at the conferences in Dallas every year, he gets up and does the twist with me. That was always a lot of fun. He was just a fun person, one that everyone should really want to know, and I feel sorry for the ones who didn't get to know him. And I don't know. It's just like it's a nightmare that I'm going to wake up from, that it's not really true, because there will always now be a Jim Mars-shaped empty space in my heart that he filled. And thank you for what you're doing.
Hi, I'm Robert Groden. I've been a researcher in the Kennedy case now for 53 years. I was a friend of Jim Marr's for, about 30, 31 years, and we always got along very well. He had a great sense of humor, and he was a walking encyclopedia of organized crime in Texas and the Kennedy assassination. He was always a good guy. I can't think of anything negative to say about him, and not that I would want to. He unfortunately had a very sad ending. He was quite ill and was on dialysis, and he actually deserved better than that. It wasn't fair in light of all that he had given us. His book Crossfire was a major success and dealt with lots of aspects of the Kennedy case. A year before it came out, he and I sat together in Cleburne, Texas, at a friend's house, and I let him see a preview copy of my book High Treason, which he liked, and he is going to be missed. He was a good guy and very knowledgeable, and quite a career as a reporter and a writer, as well as an investigator. So that's about all I've got to say about him. And I'm happy that you're doing this this presentation about him. He deserves that. And that's it. Thank you.
This is Barb McClellan, and I am honored to appear before you and with you in this tribute to Jim Marr's. And so I've got to say thank you, Sean. This tribute in your Midnight Writers News is very appropriate and necessary. Jim Marr's and I covered much of the same history of JFK and LBJ. Mine centered on LBJ in Texas. Jim covered what I wrote, and he also covered so much more. My sequel will parallel what Jim wrote and disclosed. Jim Marr's, there was only one Jim Marr's from start to now, and what he did was and remains profound. He told what happened, and he spoke the right history with the facts in his hands. Jim was a true leader. His courage was especially powerful in Texas. LBJ ruled here, and Jim went directly into the heart of a vengeful system. His impact was almost miraculous. Jim's book was Crossfire. What he disclosed was the conspiracy, the people most interested in removing JFK and in welcoming his successor. Oliver Stone saw and understood what happened. His epic movie, JFK, was inspired by Jim Marr's. That movie also represented the further disintegration of the cover-up. The conspiracy stands exposed. Thank you again, Jim Marr's. You went further, exposing the secret societies that play such an adverse role in government and the people who played such a central role in the horrific crime and its cover-up. The change is upon us in this 100th year of JFK's birth date. The result will be an upheaval in the storyline of a one-person crime. Jim brought the essential facts to bear, and the case will be closed. And many innocent people who lost out to the single shooter cover-up will be duly recognized for the heroic efforts they made. The innocents will receive justice. Jim Marr's, with what he presented, we are now on the edge of having a closure and a return to integrity in government. Jim also centered on the secret government of hidden rulers in the deep state. There they are now, exposed and subject to due process. Jim, a historian extraordinaire, an outstanding journalist, and an individual without peer. A legend in his time, and for the years to come, what he did stands for integrity, a quality vitally in need. All honor to you. An objective for the change you inspired is to see that the historic record reflects what happens. We should recognize the results. An official record should make the statements required. Plans are underway to request a Presidential Gold Medal of Honor to the honorable men and women, and Jim should be among the first. One final note, in what is for me a very important measure of a truly good man. I knew Jim Mars from many conferences. Unfortunately, because of the crowds, there was no time for in-depth discussion. Jim has his history as solid as a rock. Mine parallels his, and my sequel will support him virtually all the way. So I am honored to be able to present this tribute to Jim Nars, and I present it with the highest respect. Barr McClellan.
Hi, this is Vince Palomera, and I have very fond memories of Jim Mars. He was a very nice, humble, down-to-earth guy, despite writing arguably the most famous book on the Kennedy assassination, Crossfire, used for Oliver Stone's movie JFK. I met him in 1997 at a major JFK assassination conference in Dallas, and I met him again just last year in 2016 at another major JFK assassination conference. What always struck me in a really nice, touching way was just how approachable Jim Mars was. He never played Mr. Rockstar, Mr. Celebrity. He acted just like a regular, down-to-earth, humble guy, which ultimately Jim Mars truly was. He'll be greatly missed, but he'll always be remembered. And, yeah, he just is a true pioneer with his books, not only the Kennedy assassination, but in other areas of research. And, yeah. Rest in peace, Jim.
Now, the question I'm sure you're asking yourself is, what has 9/11 got to do with UFOs? Well, let me explain it to you. Absolutely nothing. As far as I know at this point. However, there are two things I'd like to mention. Number one, 9/11 is a good entry point for the uninitiated. The facts and information that are now available about 9/11 make the Kennedy assassination look like a deep, dark mystery. It took 40 years for the public to finally come around to understand that there was a conspiracy to kill John Kennedy and that this conspiracy was covered up at the level of the federal government. The polls show, in my experience, is that probably 80, maybe even as high as 90% of the country now understand that Kennedy was killed as a result of a conspiracy. Then that means the government lied to us. So once they understand this, then it's not going to be any big leap to look at 9/11 and the such obvious inconsistencies, problems, mysteries, controversies surrounding 9/11. And if they understand that is a government cover-up, that they've lied to us about that, then believe me, they're going to be a lot more open to the idea of the UFO cover-up. Second thing is, as a lot of you already know, when you start getting to issues like UFOs, Kennedy assassination, 9/11, it starts leading you into the small cabal of men, very few women, but possibly one or two, Hillary Clinton, but who they call themselves the globalist. I call them the New World Order people. These are the people who are rapidly pushing us towards a one world government, one world military, one world monetary unit. And once you start looking at that, you realize that UFOs, 9/11, Kennedy assassination, it all traced back to this small handful of people.
Hi, folks. It's Steve Erdman. I have a Facebook page called Dissenter, Disinter. My timeline and a group's called the same thing, and it's for dissenting viewpoints. I was one of the original founding members of the UFO study group, Greater St. Louis, back in, I believe it was 65. And some of the people in St. Louis here, and some of the ufologists like John Schussler, and then there, the originator, MUFON, was for a member for a short time, and then he went on his own endeavors. But I've been a writer off and on, outside of just trying to make a living, and a lot of my things have recently appeared on UFO Digest, and also have a WordPress, WordPress507.com, if you just want to go there and read some. They're mainly reproductions of UFO Digest with added photographs. But I got to know Jim Mars when I got interested in the Kennedy assassination through his books. Of course, you know, his JFK conspiracy books were made the basis or were quoted in Oliver Stone's JFK movie, which was very impressive. And I've always been a champion of the average person or the little guy against the government. And my viewpoints have evolved over the period of time, but I was very impressed by Jim Mars' approach. I'm glad he had a lot of success in writing, because a lot of the things he wrote about needed to be exposed. How the government works, how they're covering up UFOs, how secret societies have infiltrated the media and the government. And just in general, he was a champion. Oliver Stone was a champion, too, for making that movie. But Jim Mars' book I was read and was thoroughly entranced in it, all the aspects he covered, and he usually does a good job. The only one book I had some complaint with was his UFO book, because he included some of the people that we now know were fabricators. But that we won't hold that against him, because he's such a judicious person, such a thorough person. It's not necessary to pick straws about that. I don't think it is. So I sure miss Jim. He's a popular journalist. He's going to be missed by a lot of people, and you'll see that on the internet. A lot of people are really regretful that he passed away. And hopefully there'll be another Jim Mars reincarnated and carry on his good work.
Hello, this is Julia Toth with Midnight Rider News. And where do I begin with paying my respects to Jim Mars? Well, let's see. He attended the Oswald Conference in New Orleans in 2015. And I remember meeting him. We all hung out at the bar. I was able to chat with him on one of the evenings. And what a presence the man had, and such a fascinating history. I love that Jim Mars has pretty much been a JFK researcher since the JFK assassination happened. Not many researchers can say that. He knew something was up and fishy right away, especially after Oswald was gunned down, in the presence of all the police officers in the basement of the jail. So I always just found Jim's work to be astounding. And his book, Crossfire, is the book that I highly recommend to everyone. It's a great starting point, too. People also don't realize that Oliver Stone based the JFK movie pretty much on Crossfire. And that book is life-changing. I always ask people to, you know, really, really think about where they want to go in the direction of any research they want to do about the JFK assassination in particular, and to have a focal point, a starting point, because you can take it in so many different directions. But the wonderful thing about the book Crossfire is that it kind of answers so many questions. It really, really does. And that's what I really also admired about Jim Mars, is he was so full of knowledge, so full of life. Love the way he talked. I mean, you could definitely tell he was Texas born and bred through and through. And his presence will sorely be missed in November in Dallas. I was very happy to see him at the JFK assassination conference last year in Dallas in November. And what a loss the JFK research community just suffered. It's very sad. But I sent him blessings, and I know he's getting answers to all the questions that he ever had from the other side. And rest in peace, Mr. Mars. You were an amazing man, and you'll be truly, truly missed. A one-of-a-kind gentleman, for sure.
This is Jerome Corsi, the author of The Obama Nation, Who Really Killed JFK, and the co-author of Unfit for Command. I'm the Washington Bureau Chief for InfoWars. It was my great honor to know Jim Mars and to be his friend for many years. We admired each other's writings. Jim was one of the most brilliant in exposing the deep state. His work on JFK drew me into reading everything Jim Mars wrote. I sorely miss him. He was not only a great friend, he was a great inspiration, and I trust that his legacy will live long after him. And I'm saddened at his passing, but truly appreciative of the legacy he's left us all. And I feel an obligation to continue Jim's work on, and to Jim Mars, as I'm sure he's where he needs to be in the afterlife and to return. Jim, thank you. We are voyagers together. It has been a great honor to be included on your path. God bless you. Jerry Corsi.
Hi, this is Ole Damegård from lightonconspiracies.com. I just want to say about Jim, I really, 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 really liked him. He was a beautiful individual. So fun to be around, with such knowledge and wisdom and bravery and courage. And, you know, I don't have a lot of people that I look up to and I respect, but he is for sure one of them. And I just can't believe that he's gone. I was just, we had planned to do an interview. I was going to interview him on my podcast, Light on Conspiracies, and he had said yes to it, and everything was being prepared, and then suddenly he just stopped answering emails, and I later found out that that was when he started having these problems with his kidneys, and then he got better, and we got back in touch, but... And then suddenly we lost him, and it's very hard to understand. And I had the great pleasure of meeting him in Dallas last year, 2016, at the JFK assassination conference. And I was hoping to meet him there, and then they had put all the names of the speakers around the tables out along the walls. And I saw mine, and then I saw Jim Mars next to me, and I thought, bingo, bingo, bingo. I mean, that was it for me. I didn't have to experience anything else at the conference. Just meeting Jim would have been enough. And we hooked up. He was just so nice and so easy to be around. And he invited me and my sweetheart, Kim, to his ranch. He had this cannon. He said we can... You know, fire, I think it's some kind of old black powder from the Civil War or something. I don't know what kind of cannon it was. And also he offered a ride in his old veteran car. And so it was just, was looking forward to it. And then we lost him. I wouldn't say shocked, but I'm still so really deeply shaken that he's gone. So wherever he is, I really want to take my hat off and salute him, because what he brought to the rest of us in the form of knowledge and incredible research into so many different areas, it's just invaluable. It is, he is one of the giants in this. I mean, he wasn't very tall. He was quite a short man, but when it, in this area and as a human being, an absolute giant. And I sure as hell am going to miss him a lot.
Hello, my name is Judith Ferry Baker. I'm an advocate for the truth and for justice for John F. Kennedy and for Lee Harvey Oswald. This tribute is to a man who wrote for the people, wrote for a better world so selflessly. Of all the books he wrote, none were personal memoirs. A true journalist, he was thorough and unafraid to report what he found. Whether he was reporting on the Bilderbergs or on UFOs, he sought the best sources. He was a fact checker, and he was unafraid of the consequences. A man of such stature that the only accusation his enemies could make was that he dared to report on UFOs. Therefore, he could not have been a good journalist. Jim Mars recognized who I was. He had thoroughly investigated the Kennedy assassination and had even taught evening college courses on the subject. To their eternal discredit, individuals I will not dishonor this tribute with by even mentioning their names would try to shout him down in his own classroom. Today, these same individuals are shouting down everybody who talks to the people about the truth on the internet. For example, on Facebook, a troll who showed me a close-up of Lee's dying face on my birthday on my Facebook page. That's typical of these sick, perverted, or paid dissenters, who, however, could never disturb the unflappable Jim Mars. Jim's enemies prowled his camp not as wolves hoping to attack, but as squeaking mice, totally ineffective, and with a ludicrous sense of their own self-worth. They were ignored by the millions who knew that in Jim Mars they had a true champion, an advocate for the truth. Now, Jim picked his battles. My mother, who was a harsh woman, taught me one important lesson: choose your battles. Jim was relentlessly pro Lee Harvey Oswald, the falsely accused assassin of a great president, a president who today is being assassinated again for his character flaws, while his great accomplishments, especially in saving us from nuclear conflagration, from World War III, are being minimized to nothing. The great John F. Kennedy, recently described by the CIA-infested Smithsonian magazine as a president who accomplished nothing except to bring some charm to the political scene. Jim Mars knew that Lee Oswald had to be an agency man. He, along with the mighty Mark Lane and Dr. Cyril Wecht, Edgar Tetreault, and others, saw the absurdity of the Warren Commission's findings, a commission hand-picked by the person who benefited most from Kennedy's death, Lyndon Baines Johnson. Mars saw the absurdity of their findings from many viewpoints. The forensics, the expediency of making sure LBJ and his cronies in the military-industrial complex, plus his friends in the FBI, CIA, and Secret Service, would never be blamed for any of the tragic events of November 22, 1963. Jim Mars relied on his gut instincts and common sense. He was a native Texan living on a ranch, surrounded not by just books, but by decent men and women who had their feet solidly on the ground and who also knew things about landslide Lyndon and stuffed ballot boxes. Jim Mars knew that if it looks like a skunk and wobbles along like a skunk and smells like a skunk, then the Warren Commission, still filled with John F. Kennedy's enemies and all of them beholding to Johnson, who were crushed spiritually by the Johnson treatment. Jim Mars knew there was something stinking in Texas and in Washington, and by whatever name you might want to call it, it was not a rose. It was a skunk. And Mars wrote the crucial Hitchhiker's Guide to the Kennedy Assassination, Crossfire, that laid the whole nasty-smelling critter out in full view, from the arrogant, high-lifted tail of it to the putrid stench emanating from its anal glands, which the whole world is finally recognizing. Jim told me how he never got everything accomplished that he wanted to accomplish. But I know that he worked with me and accomplished a great deal with me, and I'm very grateful for it. He understood the love that Lee and I had. It was a wondrous and unique and really miraculous, special love, spiced as it was with the dangers we faced, and our hopes to save the world from World War III. Jim saw what Lee and I had, He understood my pain at losing Lee. He was thoroughly interested, so he interrogated me, vetted me, and to this day, no other researcher has been so thorough. Now, he wanted to determine that I was telling the truth about the man I loved, the man who saved Kennedy's life in Chicago, the man the whole world was taught to disdain and hate. His open mind was the first great step, the first of the great researchers who thoroughly studied my evidence files, who asked all the right questions, who had the essential knowledge to see that I could fill in the gaps, answer the questions he'd pondered for years, could show what really went on in New Orleans, could explain many truths behind the many masks that Lee Oswald, as a CIA spy, had to wear. Satisfied that I was who I say I am, Jim Mars wrote the afterword for my book, Me and Lee, and in that afterword he wrote these words. Could it be true, I pondered, how could a 19-year-old college student have been dragged into a covert operation to develop a cancerous weapon, and if she had, how did this involve Lee Oswald, who officially was supposed to be a lone nut and a communist who dreamed of living in Cuba? As Jim described succinctly the situation, he wrote also, quote, Judith's well-supported account places all these events, and there are things like Clinton and why he went to Mexico City and so on, into a comprehensible context, as well as helping to explain why Jim Garrison's investigation was so threatening to people in high positions of power. The events in New Orleans in the summer of 63 revealed the murderous interconnection of the major players in the assassination. It is this backdrop of anti-integrationist businessmen, oilmen, and corporate leaders, obliging and corrupt politicians, anti-communist Cubans, vengeful organized crime bosses, and loose cannons within the U.S. military, CIA, and FBI that everyone involved felt had to be kept from the public. Having interviewed Judith on several occasions and carefully studied her documentation and other materials, I can say that I found her to be both internally consistent and forthright in her statements regarding her knowledge of events in New Orleans. Furthermore, her account has been largely confirmed from several separate sources. Contrary to some claims on the internet, when I visited Mary Farrell, that grand dame of assassination researchers, at a Dallas convalescent home shortly before her death, she exhibited a continuing confidence in the basic truth of Judith's story. I further challenge anyone to recall details of their lives almost 50 years ago with the clarity and attention to detail of Judith Baker. Her recollections, which can be verified, and there are many, substantiate her claim of a photographic memory. Jim went on to fully endorse me, and that was in 2010. By 2017, secret files were being released, and Jim lived long enough to be aware that a number of them confirmed what he had said about me. That is, that I was telling the truth. For example, Ochsner was working with the CIA, I said, on a face-to-face basis in 62, and the Ochsner Clinic was associated with the CIA through 63. Now we have files that have come out to confirm that Ochsner's last face-to-face encounter with CIA was January 8, 1962, and their final personal contact with Ochsner's clinic was on November 8, 1963, just 2 weeks before Kennedy's death, contrary to former ideas that there were no contacts after the mid-1950s, for which I was castigated. And also files such as that I had said rifles had been shipped in from Caracas, Venezuela, big shipments of rifles, landed in anti-Castro hands, and now, of course, we have a file released about that, about a large shipment of another large shipment of rifles from Caracas, Venezuela, in 1963, delivered into anti-Cuban, anti-Castro hands in, among the Cubans. So now, shortly before his death, he saw all this. Even though he'd lost his vision in one eye, and he had, was on dialysis in his home, Jim was still keeping up with it all, and I hope it pleased him that his early endorsement of me was not in vain. His last email to me was shortly before he died, when he assured me, he called me Lady J, that he was far from dead, and went on to answer a question I had about a particular person. Not much later, he was dead of a heart attack. How to measure such a man? He was not a tall man. His signature Stetson, his cowboy boots, his Uncle Jim beard that served him well as Santa Claus every Christmas with his grandchildren. It wasn't his height. Was it his ever kind, ever thoughtful way? Always the gentleman, always patient, willingly signing autographs, even more willing to do everything he could to help exonerate the innocent Lee Oswald? His kidneys were failing in November 2016, when Jim told me, "Lady J, this is probably the last conference I'll ever attend. I'm not in good shape, but I'll be there, don't worry." And he was. He attended the 4th annual JFK Assassination Conference at the Crowne Plaza Hotel, and we'll have that same conference this year. And at that time, we awarded him with the Justice for John F. Kennedy Award. That's what that great man deserved and far more. And now, where is he? Well, Jim had sat tall with such great men at our conference as Dr. Cyril Weck, Edgar Tatro, Peter Dale Scott, so many more, Robert Groden. Now he's seated with the great ones who have passed before him, Sylvia Meir, Mark Lane, JFK, RFK, MLK, and I suppose Lee is there too to thank him for all he's done to defend him. And now it's time to say goodbye to a man without guile, forthright, honest, courageous, a journalist and researcher who had not a lick of self-important pomposity, who kept his personal pain and trials to himself, who was unceasingly cheerful, and whose loyalty, once gained, never wavered. Not so long ago, Jim remarked in an important interview that he had now regarded Lee Harvey Oswald as a hero. He had come to see what I told him years ago in 1999 was true. Now, when Jim first met me, he seemed interested in the evidence files I was showing him, but he really straightened up and paid attention when I told him that Lee said he had joined an abort team to try to save Kennedy's life in Dallas and that he would, quote, follow their lead. Jim, who had been relaxed, was suddenly excited and intrigued. "Mrs. Baker," he said, "would you repeat that?" When I did, Jim Marr said to me, "The abort team has never been mentioned in public. That's a fact. Can you think of anyone he mentioned?" He rattled off various names at random, but when I stopped him, hearing the name Plumley, this was Robert Tosh Plumley, I told him, "That's the name I remember. I remember it because it rhymed with Lee." That's when Jim Mars reached across the table, gripped my hand, and said, "Plumley is the one who told me about the abort team. Nobody else has ever said a thing about it, yet you knew about it. Now I have to find out what else you know." And so he did. And so we became great friends. It's interesting how the last events of his life in public we shared together. First, was the JFK Assassination Conference, where he received the award. And next, on May 29th, on John F. Kennedy's 100th birthday, we both made presentations for the JFK Birthday Conference, a big online conference. Then on May 31st, Jim and I were filmed as part of the film I Shot JFK, along with Barr McClellan, FBI agent Zach Shelton, and Gordon Ferry, to discuss James' files for the movie. Now, Jim and I were, and everyone, were filmed separately for this panel, and none of us knew what the others had to say, but yet it turned out that Jim and I had the same opinion on files, that he knew a lot and was probably there, but likely he had stepped forward to uncover mafia involvement due to his newly found conscience, but it was a question whether he had actually shot anybody or shot at anybody. Our statements were not necessarily a comfort, I'm afraid, to Jimmy Files, who I consider a brave man for speaking out to reveal the doings of the Chicago mob. That was the final time that Jim and I had occasion to speak. It was only weeks before he died. Little did I know that soon my precious friend, mentor, and champion of the truth would be dead. Jim, thank you for who you are, for what you stood for your firm and unflinching dedication to face inconvenient truths, to grip onto them and to bring them to the people. You were a man among men in your Stetson hat and those cowboy boots, with your sturdy heart filled with kindness and compassion for your fellow man. Nobody can fill your boots, Jim. Nobody dares. But you set an example to all the sellouts in media today. Jim Mars, you were a giant of integrity. Who can step forward to take your place? who has the courage, goodwill, and faith in the ultimate high worth of our fellow human beings. Who will deserve the love that we have for you? Jim, God bless you. Judith Baker signing off.
We do not any longer have a two-party state. We are a one-party nation. We have that one party has a slightly liberal left wing called the Democrats, and it's got a slightly right wing called the Republicans. But they are both answer to the one party, the war party. Because, you know, they can argue over certain social issues like stem cell research or abortion or whatever, and they keep us fighting with each other over that, so we don't look up and realize that the money, the wealth of this country is being sucked away by the war party into unnecessary wars. But part of the reason is what I just showed you, to reduce the population.
This is Don Jeffries, author of the books Hidden History and Survival of the Richest. Very sad news to lose one of the crucial second-generation researchers in Jim Mars. Jim was one of the local reporters, a few local reporters, out of Dallas that did some crucial work early on investigating the case. Later, his book Crossfire was what I still think is one of the best overviews of the Kennedy assassination. It was very influential in my own work. I never met Jim, never talked to him, but we exchanged emails, and he read an early version that was very helpful with my book Hidden History. The research community has lost one of the great figures, and the historical community has lost a great historian. Rest in peace, Jim.
Hello, my name is Sonny Paul. And I first became aware of Jim Mars approximately the time that Oliver Stone's movie JFK came out. The movie was based around Jim's book and also the work of Jim Garrison. I saw him on The Men Who Killed Kennedy on the History Channel. I attended the Ask Symposium in 1993 on the 30th anniversary of the assassination, and Jim spoke there. I've also watched numerous presentations by Jim on the internet on YouTube. More recently, I've seen him numerous times on TV, on History Channel. Starting in 1976, he taught a course on the assassination of JFK at the University of Texas at Arlington. Besides Crossfire, he also wrote the top-selling book on UFOs called Alien Agenda. I worked at the 2016 assassination conference in Dallas, where Jim spoke. I videotaped him and audio and photographed him, and I eventually got to speak to him for the first time. I told him I wanted to order his book, Crossfire, again because he had updated it. He said that would be great, except I just packed them all away. He said, why don't you write me at my website, and I'll send you a bookmark to go with the book. Just remind me that we talked about this. Unfortunately, I was unable to contact him through his website and never did get the book. But I have the joy of having talked to him in person for that brief amount of time. He had a way about him that made you feel happy just being around him. Thank you, Jim, for all the hard work you've done. You definitely left the world a better place.
I'm Randy Benson, the director and producer of the film The Searchers. I appreciate the opportunity to share my reflections of Jim Mars. I first became aware of Jim back in December of 1991 when, during the opening credits of Oliver Stone's JFK, a title card appeared that said, Based on Crossfire by Jim Mars. The next day, I bought a copy. While Mark Lane's Rush to Judgment was the first book I read about the assassination of Kennedy, Crossfire was my introduction to the world of the hard, cold facts of serious JFK research. What impressed me most wasn't just the sheer amount of information contained therein, but the method by which Mars evaluated the info. Jim always referred to himself as an old Texas reporter, and he approached all of his research as a journalist reporting facts and offering the best evaluation of the event based on those facts. After reading Crossfire, I then devoured the works of Jim Mars, like Alien Agenda and The Riots of the Fourth Reich. But I also sought out interviews and YouTube videos. I think what I respected most about Jim was his method. I had a professor in college who was a world-renowned researcher in his field. The most important notion I took from his course was that the path to the truth is paved with the stones of simply being wrong. With Jim, I honestly believe that as a scholar, the only thing he liked more than being right was being proven wrong. That's a critical part of good and honest research. And that's why his work has such staying power and was always fresh and relevant. Another thing I respected about Jim was how he was one of the few researchers who never got caught up in the intra-community squabbles. He would speak to any group, anytime. One reason for this is that he was always in search of the truth. And to get caught up in that noise was counterproductive to the goal. He always recognized that there are forces who don't want the public to know the truth, and that the best way to stop a group is quite simply to divide them, and he certainly wasn't going to be part of that. For me, personally, though, I'll remember Jim from the day I spent with him at his home in Wise County, Texas, what he called his ranchita, because it's not big enough to be a ranch. After our interview, he took us on a walk around his property with his golden lab lady, threw the ball for her, and just talked about life out in the Texas wilds. He took us to an open area on a bluff up above a valley where you could see for miles around. He talked about how this was reality and how critical it was for everyone, especially those in the research community, to maintain their connection to the land, to each other, and if possible, to their dogs. Jim was one of a kind, like so many others in the research community who have passed. We'll never see the likes of him again. But we should all take Jim's lead and approach our research. But we should all take Jim's lead and approach our research and to ignore the noise so that we always stay focused on revealing the truth of our hidden history. In our interview, Jim wrapped up with the line that's much quoted, but he delivered it with his quintessential North Texas twang that I'll never forget. And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free.
Hi, I'm Richard Otto. I'm the author of The Paradox of Our National Security Complex, How Secrecy and Security Diminish Our Liberty and Threaten Our Democratic Republic. Jim Mars is a hero of mine. I saw him interviewed on many occasions, on radio, online. I've read many of his articles. I read his book, Crossfire. He is one of the people that inspired me to not only look into the intricacies of Dealey Plaza and the assassination of President Kennedy, but many other dark events in this country's history.
My name is St. John Hunt, and I met Jim Mars for the first time, I think it was 2008. Because of Coast to Coast Radio had broadcast a section of my father's confession to me. My father, Zehar Hunt, and of course everybody knows Jim Morris is a major figure in the researching of the conspiracy. He's also an author many times published. And anyways, Jim Morris was down there in Dallas. Alex Jones flew my wife and I down. And he's just a funny looking guy with a beard. You know, he's got this hat on, and he's like 5 feet tall, and you know, he looks just like this cute kind of I don't know, some kind of an entity. But he's got a lot of charisma. He's got a lot of great vibes, and I think that's part of what I was picking up. I didn't know how important Jim was at the time. I'd never even heard of him, to tell you the truth. So, and that's because I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I don't study other people's conspiracies. So, you know, I was very nicely introduced to him, and I could tell that he was somebody that had a tremendous amount of knowledge. I later found out that he had written the book Crossfire, which Oliver Stone had used portions of for the basis of his book JFK. So, and then, of course, coming back to California and then to Florida, where I moved to, you could see Jim Mars on the History Channel's alien shows and all kinds of things like that. So this guy was an amazing person. It's the night in Dallas, we hung out for several evenings together in Dallas, talking and whatnot. And I wanted to go with my wife to a gentleman's club, and Jim said, oh, he knew the one that we'd enjoy the best. And so there I was with my wife and Jim Marr on the way to a gentleman's club, a strip club. And I just thought this was a titty bar. He called it a titty bar, yeah. He said, I can't believe I'm sitting in a car with St. John Hunt and his wife, and we're going to a titty bar. He just thought that was the coolest, funniest thing, that I would want to go, and he wanted to go with me. So it's... and over the years, we've communicated a little bit. I see him at the JFK conference in Dallas, and then there's one in New Orleans in October for Lee Harvey Oswald Innocence Campaign. And Jim is always very busy. A lot of people want to talk to him, and I certainly, it's, you know, it's well founded, because he's just a wealth of information, and he's very personable. He's very easy to approach. He doesn't put on any airs. He's been doing this his whole life, starting as a reporter from way back, around 65, I think, in and around the Dallas area. And he wrote a very nice, I don't know what they're called, but for my book, Dorothy, he wrote on the back where they have different authors, you know, review the book. I guess it's called a review. Anyways, he wrote a wonderful a little few sentences I'm going to read now. It says... this is about my book, Dorothy. He said, a captivating beauty, aid worker, spy, and mother, Dorothy Hunt, the wife of Watergate burglar E. Howard Hunt, was at the heart of U.S. government covert activities following World War II. Was the fatal 1972 plane crash that killed her along with 45 others intended to prevent Mrs. Hunt from telling what she knew about Watergate and other secrets, including the JFK assassination? Who better to present the thrilling story of the intrigue surrounding this woman than her son? I just thought that was very generous of him, because I'm sure a lot of authors want his name on the back of their books, and I was fortunate enough to have Jim do that for me. So I'm sad that he's gone. You know, he's going to be missed. He was huge.
I'm Tom Blackwell. It's impossible to grow up in Dallas in the 1960s and not be affected by the Kennedy assassination. I was 9 years old and attending the neighborhood elementary school. On November 22nd, classes were dismissed early and I proceeded home on my bicycle. I discovered later I had traveled directly past the home of Abraham Zapruder at 3909 Marquette that day. After the initial events of the assassination were known and settled, the house across the street from me became available for sale. The new owner was James Gordon Shanklin, who was in charge of the Dallas FBI office. In 1973, on the 10th anniversary, researchers of the assassination received a lot of news coverage, Penn Jones and Lou Staples, among others. I came to realize they had a lot to say about my neighbors. I attended November 22nd events at the Kennedy Memorial and Dealey Plaza over the years. In 1979, the House Select Committee on Assassinations conducted acoustic tests on Dealey Plaza. They fired a Mannlicher Carcano out of the sixth floor window and recorded the audio with a multi-track recorder located in a large truck parked next to the School Book Depository building. I was there and took pictures of the event. They fired into sandbags they placed on the street. Trees had previously been cut back to the 1963 level. They found they had to move a sandbag from the center lane of traffic on Elm Street to the southern lane of traffic because a tree remained in the way. I was there and took photos of this with a 35mm camera. Going forward, the 25th anniversary of the assassination took place in 1988. I heard there was a class on the assassination taught at the University of Texas at Arlington. I became interested in taking the class and looked around for information about it. I went to the November 22nd events at Dealey Plaza. There I found Jack White holding a videotape in his hand. It was the Nigel Turner documentary. I asked him if he knew about the class being offered, and he pointed out the man who taught it, Jim Marrs. So I connected with Jim Marrs. He gave me the details, and I did enroll in the class. In addition to the class, he conducted a discussion session for anyone who wanted to attend, which was an opportunity for speakers on the events to participate. That was where I met others who were researching the event, including Gary Mack, who was in charge of the film library at Channel 5. Dr. Bill Pulte was there. So was Jack White. Sometimes Madeline Brown and Stephen Brown and Larry Howard were there. I had gotten a friend at KTOK in Oklahoma City to travel 200 miles to attend these sessions. Together we ran into a man who said he was writing a book on the assassination. His name was Gerald Posner. Mr. Posner would not tell us what his book was going to be about. Now, of course, we know. Jim impressed me with his openness about the assassination and a policy to listen to anybody. I helped with this by inviting a friend, Bill Wiseman, to address the group. He was the first deputy sheriff inside the school book depository on November 22, 1963. This was the only time that he was invited to speak and tell his story to researchers. Jim taught the class with a large loose-leaf notebook that he later developed into the book, Crossfire. Jim was being encouraged by leaders of a project known as the Assassination Information Center to produce a book on the event. I was present at a planning session where Larry Howard, Bernard Finsterwald, and Larry Ray Harris were discussing this. I asked Jim about photographs he was going to include in the book. He said he did not have enough, so I offered a photo that I took of the HSCA's acoustics test in exchange for the first copy of the book Crossfire that came off the press. I have it, and it's autographed. As Crossfire became popular, there were people who asked me to sign their copies of my photo that appears there. Crossfire was one of two books used as a basis for the movie JFK. There's a scene involving Kevin Costner that depicts the message that is shown in my photo. Jim Mars does appear in the movie JFK as an extra in the crowd. He shaved his beard off for this and appeared at one of the discussion sessions at UTA during that time. It wasn't long before he grew it back. When the 6-4 Museum opened, there was a preview where the precinct chairs of both political parties in Dallas were invited, along with some serious researchers. Jim and I got to walk around and comment to one another about the exhibits, which we were able to see for the first time. Jim appeared at a number of forums and events over the years, including November 22nd events at Dealey Plaza. The movie JFK led to public demands for passage of the JFK Act for release of locked-up documents from the National Archives. I've always been aggrieved that people who put so many hours into research of the event ended up passing on before the government documents were released. That includes Penn Jones and Lou Staples and John Judge and now Jim Mars. I have always wondered what information James Gordon Shanklin, who lived across the street, was studying that was not released to the public for so many years. I will personally miss Jim Mars and will miss seeing him at gatherings of researchers. Over the years, I've also attended services of those I knew who were also involved, including Penn Jones, Gene Hill, Larry Ray Harris, Madeline Brown, her son Stephen Brown, Jack White, and Gary Mack. We will not forget Jim Mars.
I'm Joseph McBride. I'm the author of the 2013 book Into the Nightmare, My Search for the Killers of President John F. Kennedy and Officer J.D. Tippit. Well, I'm honored to be asked to comment on Jim Mars. I'm sorry to hear about his death. He contributed a lot to the JFK research community. His book Crossfire is an excellent overview of the case, and anybody who's starting out wanting to get a general sense of what it's about is well advised to read that book. It's probably the best introductory book, and it's very sophisticated and covers a great deal of ground. One thing I appreciate about Jim, who I never met, although I did see him once. He taught a course at University of Texas Arlington, one of the first courses, if not the first, on the assassination, and I happened to be in Dealey Plaza once doing some research, and there he was doing his class, so I sort of eavesdropped on it for a while, and I was impressed, and I heard that he had many witnesses, and a lot of important people attended the class and shared their experiences and thoughts, and he influenced a lot of researchers, including John Armstrong, who wrote Harvey and Lee, which is a great book. Anyway, Jim was a journalist for a long time, and as a longtime journalist myself, I appreciate the fact that he dug for information and didn't just repeat things that other people had written. He was very good at synthesizing the research, and I know from experience that's a really hard thing to do, because you could write a book on this case that would go on for thousands of pages. I wrote one that was over 600 pages, and I had to really struggle to keep it at a reasonable length because it's such a complex case. But he managed to do that, which is a real achievement, to do that without being simplistic. But along the way, he found and interviewed a lot of witnesses and other people involved in the case and presented a lot of information on them that helped other researchers, you know, follow leads and give them a sense of who to contact and all that, which is one of the important things. In this field, we all kind of stand on each other's shoulders and build on each other's work, and he helped lay an important foundation. And of course, the book was one of the sources for Oliver Stone's tremendous film JFK, along with Jim Garrison's book on the case. And Jim Mars's book gave Stone and Zachary Sklar, his fellow screenwriter, their general sense of how to structure the film, and then they built it around Garrison. So that's a very important thing to have contributed to that great film that holds up so well and influenced so many people and helped lead to the release of many documents. We're starting to see more documents coming out of the remaining ones that haven't been released yet, but literally millions of pages of documents came out because of that film, and it educated whole generations of people to the facts of the case. And the film was viciously attacked by a lot of people who have a vested interest in the lone gunman theory, but it's actually a very accurate film. Having researched this case, I did 31 years of research on Into the Nightmare, my search for the killers of John F. Kennedy and Officer J.D. Tippit, my book on the case, and I can vouch for the fact that JFK is actually pretty close to what happened as far as we know. There's a little dramatic license here and there, but it's a very accurate film, ironically, because it's been accused of being the opposite. And a lot of that can be credited to Jim Mars, so we wish his memory well, and his work will live on. He did a lot of other books and on different subjects, but Crossfire, I think, is a great contribution. So anyway, thank you for letting me pay my tribute.
This is S.T. Patrick, the editor-in-chief of MidnightWriterNews.com and the host of the Midnight Writer News Show. I want to thank everyone for lending their precious time to this project. You did so on short notice with a few friendly, encouraging reminders from yours truly. So really, I mean this. Thank you all. Though I met Jim Mars only once, I feel as though he has been a friend for close to 30 years. I met him in college when I purchased Crossfire, the plot that killed Kennedy. As a journalism student who would go on to be a high school history teacher and then a dreamer starting Midnight Writer News, Jim Mars was maybe the most important inspiration I had on this quest for truth. I would later buy Alien Agenda, Rise of the Fourth Reich, Rule by Secrecy, Above Top Secret, Psi Spies, Population Control, Our Occulted History, Trillion Dollar Conspiracy, and The Terror Conspiracy Revisited. I would guess that out of my all-time top 20 non-fiction books, Jim Mars probably wrote 8 or 9. I've always said that Jim was the people's journalist, the people's alternative historian, alternative to the mainstream, that is. He wrote for people who buy books. He wrote for those who listened to his many radio and podcast appearances, and he wrote for those who attended his classes and his presentations. Jim didn't write to impress other researchers. Jim wrote for you, and Jim wrote for me. Jim had a great way of signing books. Always question authority, he would write, and always question authority we will. Jim just looked at things differently. He had a wide mind, and many ideas could fit in there, and did. Jim never made a community feel less important than another. He never made public fun of any community, except, of course, the mainstream community of the journalistic and historical establishment. And he never, to my knowledge, mocked other researchers by name. This has become a competitive world. And sadly, this has become a competitive field. When we started Midnight Writer News, we wanted to have the fire of Alex Jones, the spirit of Jim Mars, the discernment of Robert Groden, and Mae Brussels' amazing ability to seek and find links between people, organizations, and events. Jim would want us to work together, and that's what we will do, as a tribute to Jim. For we will always miss the view from Mars. Jim Mars, December 5th, 1943, August 2nd, 2017. From the other side of the mountain, on the best side of midnight, I wish you peace.
When we dance together, my world's in disguise. It's a fairyland tale that's come true. And when you look at me with those stars in your eyes, I could waltz across Texas with you. Waltz across Texas with you in my arms. Waltz across Texas with you. Like a storybook ending, I'm lost in your charms, and I could waltz across Texas with you. Heartaches and troubles are just up and gone. The moment that you come in view, and with your hand in mine, dear, I could dance all night long. I could waltz across Texas with you. Waltz across Texas with you in my arms. Waltz across Texas with you. Like a storybook ending, I'm lost in your charms, and I could waltz across Texas with you.